well, tell me first how you and your brother came to buy the station.
My wife and I had become friends with a young couple in Jonesboro named Hal King. He and his wife, we had bumped into them and had run around a few times with them. And it turned out he owned the radio station. The original owner and founder was Jay Beard. Hal King had the station for 4 years. We had met Hal and sort of liked him, had no idea he was interested in selling the station. We happened to be looking around for an investment. And it turned out that a third party who happened to know we were looking for an investment and that he was interested in selling the radio station, which we did not know. But the third party brought us together, and it worked because we happened to know why he was interested in selling the radio station. And we checked into it. It seemed a good investment for us. Carter and I are very alike. We were young. I was 28. We had a reasonable amount of business knowledge already. The principles don't change much from business to business. And we both were literate. We did not have broadcasting experience per se. But we felt confident that if you need an engineer, you get an engineer, et cetera. And Norman Bowman, who happened to be the engineer and was for many years with us afterwards, left for a while and went into the TV business, came back in the last our declining years with the radio station. He was also the engineer for quite a while. But that's how we happened to find out about it. It strictly began as an investment.
Yeah, no direct love of radio so much.
Well, we were intrigued by it. Yes. Uh-huh. In other words, we weren't looking for just any business. It seemed like a fit. We were both literate. We both were interested in, we had similar interests, my brother and I, both in the kinds of things that make up radio. We were not right off the farm ourselves. And we were both local. We'd grown up in the community. We knew the area. There were more positives than negatives about it.
Yeah, Jonesboro, or I guess KBTM was the main broadcasting outlet for Jonesboro at that time. The only other station was KNEA.
KNEA, right.
And I don't know, was KAIT, I guess they were probably on the air by then?
No. When we first had the radio station, they were not. We acquired the radio station. We bought it and made the arrangements in 57 and literally took over January of 58.
And Hal King didn't hold on to the station very long, only 4 years. Do you know why?
Well, he had two other stations that he acquired. He acquired two other stations, one in Florida, and I don't remember where the other one was. And anyway, then we came along. Jay Beard was still alive in Jonesboro. He had been a native of Perigo, originally. The station was actually founded in Perigo.
Yeah, I read a lot of the stories about that. Arkansas Airwaves, the book by Ray Poindexter, had some great details.
When we bought the station, the AM was 250-watt daytime only. And the FM was 8,000 watts. TV had just gotten popular. And FM was considered a lame duck. What did you do with an FM? And many people dropped their FMs. FM was getting ready to kick off just when TV came along. And it seemed to undermine. The AM went on as regular, as expected. Then over a period of the next few years, stereo came along. Music became a more dominant thing. And over a period of years, it turned around, and the AM became the lame duck, and FM blossomed. When that happened, we went to 50,000 watts in steps, and then later went to 100,000. The AM, we took from a 250-watt daytime during our watch to a maximum of 1,000 watts, and we ended up going 24 hours. So by the time you came along, I think, if you remember correctly, both stations were 24 hours, one AM and one FM. Most people with FM struggled for many years. What do you do with the FM? And we went through a lot of strange things like hooking up to, what did they used to call those machines that had a lot of records, like a Nickelodeon, a Wurlitzer, or there was some brand name.
The Muzak?
Well, it was not Muzak.
No.
It was something else. It was a big cabinet type thing, but played 45s in a row.
Jukebox?
Yeah, I don't remember the name.
Uh-huh.
But we did a lot of things like that for kind of automation to try to make it just to sustain it while we went on with that. We didn't want to give up the, I don't know why, but we didn't want to give our FM up, which turned out to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
We also ended up, when we did broadcast on the FM, we were the first stereo in Arkansas. And oddly enough, when we first started it, it was like a game. We broadcast one channel on AM and one channel on FM. And people would have listened to the two radios, and then we did some crazy things like playing records that would show the train coming, you know, here you could hear the train coming in, one speaker and out the other, and all those kinds of sound effects when you first started. And then when we became serious about it, everything went stereo then.
Yeah, it sounded like pretty much the FM was mostly used as background music. A lot of businesses would have it on in the background, that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, as I remember, I think that. And then Tommy McDonald in Jonesboro got into the Muzak business. And I can't remember. It seems to me that we contracted with him for a while. I'm not absolutely certain about that. For picking that music up and playing it for those purposes. And I don't remember whether the ASCAP BMI became a problem there. I'm fuzzy about that. He did then end up with kind of a Muzak company, I think, playing that kind of music. That was never a major factor with us as far as income was concerned.
Well, what was the programming like on the AM when y'all first bought it?
When we first bought it, the AM was, what did they used to call it when it was a segmented program? You know, you had farm programming for the farm program, religious programming for religious.
The block programming?
Block programming. I couldn't think of the terminology. It was mostly block programming. It was still pretty well when we came along. We were not a country station. It had been, years back, had been a country station when country had been popular in the first go-around. When we came, it was pretty well pop standard, what we call pop standard. You know, Peggy Lee, Frank Sinatra, that was that era.
Y'all kept the call letters the same, never changed the call letters, at least on the AM.
On the AM, we never changed them. The call letters, partially out of respect, they were not easy call letters to work with when you tried to do ads and PR and that sort of thing, but it had been named for Beard's Temple of Music. Jay Beard founded the station, and his father had a music store, pianos, instruments, and that sort of thing, in Paragould, and it was called Beard's Temple of Music. That's where the BTM came from. So we kind of left that for old-time reasons and sentimental reasons. We eventually changed the FM, if you recall, and went to KJBR. KJBR, we were thinking in Jonesboro. I wish we'd thought a little bit bigger at that stage of the game and gone, made it not so much related to the city, but we didn't. And JBR had been a ship of some kind, had those call letters, and they had declassified or whatever they do with the ship, and the call letters were available, so we got them. That's where the KJBR came from.
And you slowly, as you said, expanded the power of the FM. When did it go to 50,000 watts, do you recall?
I don't recall those actual days. It was not 50,000 for very long because it became obvious that it needed to be go on and go the full 100,000. I don't remember whether it had anything to do with the 107 coming in, 107, 108, whatever they called themselves. Came a country station, whether it was for competitive reasons or whether we had already planned to go, I don't really remember.
Well, I've got the newspaper articles. There were several that were in the Jonesboro Sun in 74 in December when y'all first got permission to go to 100,000 watts. And then when you actually did, and I saw a lot of photos that Guy had taken with y'all that night, and y'all had champagne and a big celebration.
Yes. And we did that again when we did in our first automation system. I don't know whether those we had two matching automation systems. On the FM, we sort of stayed automated for quite a while. The AM, we were in and out. Portions were automated. The majority were live until the FM, but then it reverted. FM became more and more the major station, AM more and more what do you do with it, and it eventually went all talk, as happened across the nation, of course. And I'm this is just an old timer throwing in something for fun, but I think talk radio has been one of the most divisive things in this nation. I think it's polarized this country more than anything in the world. And I've always been kind of ashamed that it was on my watch that some of these things came in. Rush Limbaugh for one of them. I'm not real enamored of Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, I remember when y'all added Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, when I first got into radio, you still had to have equal time. And when I, after working there in Jonesboro, I eventually went to Little Rock and was working at KARN. And yeah, they had Rush Limbaugh in the afternoon, but they had Pat Lynch, who was a proud liberal, on in the morning.
Yeah. And well, that's why we originally brought him in. But I really do think nationwide, that next to Vietnam, I don't think of anything that has divided this country as much as talk radio.
And y'all sold the stations in 1992,
No, it was 93.
Oh, was it 93?
It was late 93, almost 94. It was the last of 93,
Was Larry Duke operating the stations before?
The technique that was used,
technically
it was under our control, but he programmed it from the time that we made the sale. He took over by contract. We had a contract until the FCC approved the final sale. Again, I've forgotten the terminology.
Yeah. Well, y'all had the stations for about 35 years. That's a good long time.
Right.
Well, why did y'all decide at that point to get out?
Well, I think radio, as in many other banks, had to get larger. Stores were getting larger. Supermarkets were getting larger. You either had to get in radio for it to be economically feasible in a much bigger way, or get out of it. Our commercial interests were primarily agricultural. Much as we enjoyed the radio, we were not inclined to expand in that direction. Guy was managing the station. We really needed him elsewhere at that stage of the game. And it happened. Larry Duke happened to come along with an attractive offer.
Yeah,
that's really the truth of the matter.
I remember him saying that he had always been concerned after y'all made the upgrade, put the antenna on an 1100 foot tower, that y'all were really the only station that could, if y'all had changed to country, compete against K-Fine.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what did you miss working in radio? Y'all had other entities. Y'all was it a cotton gin down in Truman?
Yeah, we farm and it was cotton gin. We just had other areas that we needed to spend time to. And you were more and more working for the equipment companies instead of for radio. And after 35 years was long enough. I enjoyed it. They were some really happy, fun years, but I'd had it, and we really needed to get out of it, or get bigger. One way, either go and buy stations and get a little bit larger, which most of them have done, as you've seen. Larry didn't hold his for very long before he sold it. And I really, now, it's like banks. They've changed signs so many times and merged and bought. You don't know who. I don't really know. Haven't kept up with the radio in the last few years. They changed hands so fast there for a while.
No,
I really have not missed it. I enjoyed it, but I was kind of glad. I think Guy maybe missed it more than I did.
Yeah, he kind of, I guess, grew up with that. I saw photos of him. You know, he's still a kid. He's got braces on, and he's in front of a microphone on the air.
He grew up there 15 or 16 years old. You know, he knew everybody. And he grew up, he did look a little older later, particularly after he got the braces off. He looked a little older than he was.
Uh-huh.
And he'd worked with a lot of the announcers. He'd been there, you know, Bill Little and Dennis and everything. So I think he enjoyed it. Probably was a little, anyway, that's the truth of the matter, how it happened.
Any thoughts? What was the biggest challenge for you while you were operating the stations?
Well, I think the going to the power, I was sort of pleased that we did take both stations to the maximum power that they were able to do. That, at least, I think, was the, and going to stereo being the first. I think we were the first stereo station in Arkansas. Those three things, I think, were the things that I was proudest of. I don't remember challenges that were constant. Employee, really, how do you keep the thing going 24 hours with personnel and holidays and all those things? It was a constant. As the owners, you're working a whole lot more hours than the individual employees are, because you've got to be down there and be sure it goes.
Yeah.
And you have to watch books. We had a couple of situations of embezzlement. That's where an owner has to be able to walk in. I would go in periodically and close the books out. Just unexpectedly, I would come in. And that's when I found it. And that's true in any business.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have some, not just the broadcasting knowledge, you have to have some business knowledge also.
Was it difficult to maintain, to be profitable? I think I had read, like, by the late 80s, only 40% of radio stations were actually making a profit.
We never had a year that we didn't make a profit. Some were better than others. But it was certainly getting more difficult. That's why I said it's like one service station. One service station couldn't exist anymore. You needed to have five or six service stations, ghastly stations, whatever they call them. The same thing was becoming true in radio. You were getting more and more competition. Cable was coming. The internet came later after we got out. I've never regretted getting out, because I think we got out at the right time. The same thing's happening to newspapers now. I think newspapers are in terrible trouble.
Yeah, indeed. I was working for the Miami Herald before coming back here in 2009, and yeah, just kept having to make huge cuts to the newsroom, you know, getting rid of like several dozen positions at one time, and then a few months later, another round. So yeah, newspapers, it's a good analogy.
And in a way, that's kind of sad, because the more that happens, the more you lose the local connection. The more it becomes prefabricated, everything that happens, and the less connection there is really in the local community, affecting the local radio station. Going to the local grocery store where everyone knew you, now they don't give a damn what your name is. You're just another customer going through the system.
Yeah.
Except the computer will tell them whether you're buying this product or that product, and you'll get your concessions back in printouts. If you watch what you get at the grocery store, they know exactly what you're buying. And so we're becoming a little bit more nationwide in every aspect of society. I think more impersonal, less. And it's the same thing with the internet. Everyone's on Facebook talking to each other, but they don't see each other very much.
Yeah.
So it's a changing world. I'm glad I've lived long enough to see some of the changes. Many of them are very good, and I'm excited about it. I don't think how we use them all are so wonderful, but that'll turn out positively at some point, too. Most things do.
Yeah. Well, finally, you expressed some regret earlier, just that it was sad to learned that Clear Channel did eventually basically kill off the 101.9 to move it at a lower power to Memphis.
Well, I hated to see it leave Jonesboro. I hated to see the 100,000 watt leave Jonesboro. But I knew that existed because we had looked at it at one time, too, and decided it was not worth it. But have they actually, has that gone through?
Yeah, they actually did formally do that. I think it was in October, and they've got a replacement. They put the KISS brand on 101.7 now, which is a lower strength. But yeah, 101.9 is now officially a Memphis station. I think the tower is in Crawfordsville.
Supposed to be somewhere halfway between.
Yeah.
But I really, I've gone and, you know, once you get away from it, you go into a different direction. I started doing the things that I wanted to do late in life, and I don't pay much attention anymore.
Yeah. So what have you been doing? You're 82, and you're doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I mean, physically, I'm in good shape. I hope mentally I am.
Uh-huh. I definitely can tell you are. And you graduate, you got a degree?
Yeah, I walked just this past November. I mean, December. And it's exactly 60 years since I walked last from the University of Missouri. So,
wow.
Anyway, well, I don't know what possessed me. I had always wanted, I periodically had gone back to ASU to take courses I had missed when I was at the University of Missouri. I had never taken business law and wanted to. And I was married, had a couple of children. It was 57 that I went back and did that.
Hmm.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. Had a actual application for everything that came up, and it would have been wasted on me as a student. And then later I've always been interested in Spanish, so I sort of went back and started taking a few courses, then got busy and dropped, and finally, about 18 months ago, a year ago, September, I decided I want to go back and pick up a couple of courses that I had originally gone for that they didn't offer, that they now offered, and started in. Suddenly, I was close enough to get a degree. I thought, oh, hell, why don't I just go on and do it?
Yeah.
So, I did.
Good.
And my children are all in their 50s now, all five of them. And I'm 82. I don't feel it. I don't hurt. I don't ache. I look in the mirror, and I see an old man. But that's not who, that's not who you are behind the eyes. You don't feel that way.
Uh-huh.
And I've told all my children, I said, by all rights, you read about me every day dropping dead, and you probably will. But, you know, I don't feel like I'm going to. I'm going to be the most surprised SOB when it happens.
Good for you.
So that's better than aching and hurting anyway.
Yeah. Well, I drove by the old building when I was in Jonesboro last week. So glad it's still standing. I'm surprised it wasn't torn down.
Well, they made a law office out of it.
Uh-huh, right.
Yeah.
I had a hard time finding the hospital around there has grown so much.
Oh, yes.
That,
yeah.
Yeah, it's good to see that the building is still there. That was an interesting old building. I liked a guy among the things, the artifacts he has were the, I guess they were speakers that were in the ceiling that said KBTM.
Yes.
Yeah, so glad he saved a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, he has quite a few of the things. And Jay Beard had a whole lot of them from before we took it, and I tried my best to get him to give it to the museum at ASU. And I knew the cousin, I mean, he had a nephew, or his wife's nephew in Memphis, and I think he probably ended up with them, but I think it's a shame that they couldn't be in the museum at Arkansas at ASU.
Yeah. Well, I'm disappointed there's not more left about the stations. That was part of why I wanted to write this, and looking so much at the FM too, since it was the first FM in the state,
yeah,
and first stereo, and was such a powerhouse for so long.
Well, we enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed the history, but you know, as you can say, you're 40. We were there 35 years. 35 years is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We owned it longer than anyone has ever. Hal just had it for the 4 years, and Beard had it many years less than we did. I think the FM came on in 47.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I forget when the AM came on.
I think it was 1930.
Probably was.
Or that the license, I was just reading it, the license came down like around the time of the stock market crash.
Yeah.
Actually put it on in 1930 is what I read in that book, Arkansas Airwaves.
Well, you know, I think Jay Beard he was an only child and kind of an electronic nerd, I think. I mean, that's what we would call him today. And I think he started out just tinkering around and then got licensed for this, a license, I don't know all that. That's probably all in the Poindexter's book. Probably.
Yeah.
Because I remember going to a dinner where they were recognizing Jay and Vita, his wife, in Little Rock. And I think it's when his book came out. I think Poindexter's book came out. What year was that, do you know?
74.
Okay, well, I remember going to a banquet in or dinner they had, and they were recognizing the book and honoring Jay as a historical broadcaster or something of that sort. Then.
Mm-hmm. Well, Alan, I really appreciate your time. I've
enjoyed it. Took me back in memory lane, as they say.
Good. All right.
Well, good luck with it.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.